Hey, Northeast Pennsylvania, it's Rob O'Donnell here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that Odyssey app. Yes, it is Tuesday, May 27th, 2025, 3:08 here, 72 degrees. I am back here in the flesh with you. Thank you for allowing me my week to be with my family during my daughter's graduation commissioning. Those of you who follow me on social media, you know what the week was about. But we're back for a little bit here, and I appreciate all of that. Yesterday being Memorial Day, I want to start with, before I get into, the week's events and, how it's been, quite a week. I just a little while ago posted a picture of my daughter with Vice President J.D. Vance. It was great having a former, a Marine, giving the commencement address at the United States Naval Academy this week. It was something special. It was just a great week. Weather was a little so-so, but the days that I really, asked for and prayed for, one day with the Blue Angels and graduation day. Everything else I could have managed. We can come and go in the rain, but things that are outside, the things that are outdoors and weather permitted, was good. The Blue Angels were canceled their second day on Wednesday. But it was great to see them on Tuesday in all their glory. But again, with yesterday being Memorial Day, and I was truly around heroes all week, in bed with them, immersed with them, watching them graduate and move on to all portions of our world to serve our nation in uniform as ensign in the Navy's and second lieutenants in the Marine Corps. It was just an incredible, incredible display. But just the others that came, a family friend, Navy SEAL Chief Eddie Gallagher, came in to do my daughter's first salute. That was a surprise for a lot. Obviously, my daughter knew about it, but it was quite an event. I appreciate him coming all the way, across the country, pretty much, to be here for our special event. And at the house afterwards, it was great having him. We did bump into Congressman Rob Bresnahan was there for the graduation. He did come up to us as well, so it was great having our congressman there for his first Naval Academy graduation as congressman, and it was great for him to see because he will be nominating 10 individuals, men and women from all his district, to go to these service academies, each service academy, and it will be a good thing that he saw what the conclusion of those 4 years were. So it was great that he was there as well. One of the things that I had the honor, and I truly take it as that, yesterday being Memorial Day, Friday after the graduation at our home that we rented for the week, had a Gold Star father there. And he himself is a retired Navy captain. Now, a Navy captain is an 06. It's the rank just before an admiral in the Navy. It's a little different than Air Force and Air Force, Marines, and Army rank system, where a captain would be an 03. We've been put in contact over the past couple of years, basically, for our love for service and what I do here on the radio and what I do in the Navy. And I invited him to come over because it was truly important. And I had the time to sit down with him one-on-one. And Thomas Feeks, who's a retired captain, lost his son, who was a Navy SEAL in combat. And he was not able to come to the graduation. He was invited to the graduation, but rightfully so, he was at Arlington National Cemetery where his son is buried. So him and his wife were there with some other family members, but he said, hey, later that evening, we're going to stop by. And he did just that. And I was able to have some time where just him and I were sitting out on the back porch talking about his son. And Patrick Feeks was born October 8th in 1983 in Santa Clara, California. He enlisted in the Navy, attended the Navy Preparatory School in Newport, Rhode Island, July 17th, 2002. And the preparatory school prepares you to go to the Naval Academy if you're accepted to the preparatory school. He left the preparatory school on February 28th of 2003. He said being an officer in the Navy is not for him. He wanted to be a Navy SEAL. And even though you can be an officer and a Navy SEAL, there's different jobs. There's different things you do in those capacities. So he joined the Navy in April 5th of 2006, and he went to active duty began basic training in November 2nd, 2006. He completed the NTC Great Lakes, which is where most Navy sailors go through. In January 2007, he then attended basic underwater demolition SEAL training at Coronado, California, what we know as BUDS, from January to October 2007. After completing advanced SEAL training, Petty Officer Feek served with the SEAL Team 3 at Coronado from May 2008 until he was killed in action when a UH-60 Black Hawk helicopter he was aboard was shot down over Afghanistan in August 16th of 2012. He was buried in Arlington National Cemetery. Now, his Bronze Star Medal with Valor citation reads, "For heroic achievement in connection with combat operations against the enemy while serving as lead communicator and sniper for Naval Special Warfare 1324, in direct support of Operation Enduring Freedom from December 2011 until August 2012. Petty Officer Feeks demonstrated great skill and bravery in 86 combat operations and 33 hours of troops in contact that resulted in 37 enemy killed in action. On 26th of October 2012, during a combat patrol, his unit was attacked by 15 Taliban fighters in three positions. Petty Officer Feeks immediately maneuvered to a high ground position and engaged the enemy with precision sniper fire. As the volume and accuracy of the enemy contact increased, he maneuvered to an open from his covered fighting position to man an MK-47 automatic grenade launcher. With disregard for his personal safety, he exposed himself to enemy and engaged multiple positions with an assault rate of 40-millimeter grenades. While communicating with two armed air assets, his actions contributed to six enemy killed in action and the increased security of the village. By his extraordinary courage, zealous initiative, and total dedication to duty, Petty Officer Feeks reflected great credit upon himself and upheld the highest traditions of the United States Naval Service. Combat Distinguished Device is authorized for his Bronze Star." He also served in Iraq in 2010. Before he was killed in action in Afghanistan in 2012. "Sitting with his dad, I'm truly a better person today for the 45 minutes, an hour that we had just to ourselves out back with a lot else going on. It was, you know, a big house, and you know, I just wanted to sit down and talk with him. And he was telling us how when he goes to Arlington now, the men and women that are around his son, Patrick, that are buried there alongside him, that made the ultimate sacrifice for you or I, defending our nation. He knows them all. He knows the names and stories of each individual, 10 gravestones to the side and 10 rows forward and back. He knows their family members. He knows their routine. He said, you know, with Memorial Day being here, they like going, you know, a few days before Memorial Day to sit there and have their special time. He goes, a lot of other families do that. And he was telling me about the soldiers, sailors, and airmen and Marines that are around his son buried next to him, their families, and what they do when they go there and how they're friends and they have conversations and they pull their chairs up to one another and they spend time with each other. It was just incredibly humbling. That we have people like this. And I apologize. Because we should be a country. We've always been a country that's worth dying for. Every soldier, every sailor, every Marine that I spoke to this week, that's what they said to me. You know, especially when Memorial Day came up. You know, don't wish me a happy Memorial Day. It's not a happy Memorial Day. Don't wish. I don't want to hear about it. And even though I'm glad you enjoy barbecues and a long weekend and such like that, be a country worth dying for. And not only did we watch 1,000 Marines and Navy sailors swear an oath to defend our nation, there were 3,000 others sitting there waiting to take that oath, another 1,000 next year, another 1,000 the year after that, another 1,000 the year after that. And we listen to leaders like the Vice President of the United States. We listen to leaders like the Chief of Naval Operations, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, the Secretary of the Navy. Tell these young men and women that their leadership, that their responsibility will be their greatest challenge. And if they accept that challenge and the sailors and Marines around them lead them with honor and guide them, then anything's possible. But out of a week of pomp and circumstance, a week of celebration, a week of gratitude and honor watching, you know, our youngest daughter swear an oath and become a United States Marine Corps officer, the 45 minutes I sat down with a Gold Star father, the honor to hear his story and him talk about his son and his family, and not only him, but those who are laid to rest beside him at Arlington National Cemetery and their families. That is what Memorial Day is about. That is what this week culminated with. You know, there's always that understanding that when your children serve, when your family serves, when your husbands, your wives, your fathers, your mothers serve, you know, there is that possibility. But to sit down with actually someone who's lived through that, where we ourselves have had close calls with that, it truly brings home, you know, what a great nation we are. Every gravestone you see at a military cemetery had their brothers and sisters alongside them when they made the ultimate sacrifice. Every gravestone you see at a military cemetery has family that mourns them, friends that miss them, husbands, wives, mothers, fathers, children that mourn for them. Speaking to some of them, it's always the same. Make their sacrifice. Live your lives like their sacrifice was worth it. And if you can put yourself in that position to have that mentality, they're just way better people than I am. It's incredible that there's people like this that walk amongst us. So on this Memorial Day weekend, you know I was gone for a week of celebration, but it was important for me to have that conversation. It was important for me to bring that to you, especially a day after Memorial Day. So we'll talk about the rest of the week and such there, but that was one of the things that were ironed into me, that 45-minute conversation, hearing the stories of not only, you know, his child and his life and how he found out when it happened, but every time he goes to Arlington National Cemetery, the bond he has with the other families that are there, the knowledge he has on, you know, what they're doing in life, how they're doing, how they're coping, you know, what their routine is when they go to visit their sons, their daughters, their husbands, their fathers. It's just incredibly humbling. And I wanted to bring that to you. I hope I didn't disappoint. It's 3:22 here at WILK. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Got a bunch of texts in saying, you know, I was having sort of a crappy day, and thank you for putting into perspective for me. So I appreciate that. Appreciate you being here and putting up with the week of best ofs, I guess. Sorry about that. But listen, I have to live by the way I preach. I preach family first. I always, and I will always say that as much as you can, and money is not everything, as much as you can, make sure you take that family time. Make sure you be there for the special events. Make sure you are present. Make sure you're the example for when you're not there, your kids say, hey, you know, that's how I want to live my life. That's how I want to be. That's how I want to treat other people. So, you know, I could have been probably a lot well off if I worked, I did work a lot of overtime, but if I took it all in money and made a lot more money and, you know, padded the pension and all that, but I much rather have been present for my three children's events growing up when they were young. And they now I start to see that, you know, my first grandson, you know, you can see that now and how important it is to them because it was important and it was something I instilled in them. So it was a fun week. It was a fun week. Like I said, the weather was a little iffy. It started off 80 and sunny, and then by Wednesday it was in the 40s and rainy and got up into the 50s, but rained both days. Like I said, the Blue Angels were canceled on Wednesday, but they did do their complete show, and then some. There was even a little extra bonuses in the show where Fat Albert showed up towards the end and did their own show. And it's amazing how maneuverable that big C-130 is when it wants to be. But it was great. The sneak flyby at 600 knots that scares the hell out of people who haven't seen a Blue Angels show was just incredible. It was just a great week. And again, I have friend Eddie Gallagher down there, Navy SEAL 9 combat deployments. Retired for a few years now. Put a uniform on. I mean, he hasn't worn a uniform in 5 years. Put it on and came up to Annapolis to do my daughter's first salute. It's tradition for a newly commissioned officer to do a first salute. It goes back in naval tradition. It goes back in tradition. You could look up the Silver Dollar salute. And basically, it was a way for new officers to repay their senior enlisted that got them through basic training, that got them through training to be an officer, because the pay was so bad for the senior Navy enlisted, for the senior enlisted. So you pick someone that's been special to you, that's motivated you. It's interesting because it came up on my timeline. 5 years ago, my daughter did her first Murph workout with Eddie, virtually. They were in different parts of the country. You know, she was obviously here in Pennsylvania. He was down in Florida. And every time they finished an evolution, you know, they would video chat each other. And I have some of the video there, but it came up. And she finished her first Murph with him. If you don't know what the Murph workout is, it was it's a mile run. 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, 300 air squats, and then another mile run. My daughter finished her Murph yesterday. Before she's reporting, I told her it probably wasn't the smartest thing because her hand is all torn up with blisters now from all the pull-ups. But she's reporting to Quantico in 5 days. Probably not the smartest thing to do, but I'm glad she did it. And you know, my son was able to complete the Murph too, you know, somewhere doing something. So we got those text messages. It's good to do. I did my last Murph 6 years ago. But thanks to injuries, the Murph is not in my wheelhouse anymore. Maybe I'll get up to something close to it again. But, you know, it was a good break away from politics and such like that. You know, it's interesting. I saw that you know, our governor again is in the media blasting House Republicans for ripping away Medicaid and SNAP from Pennsylvanians. But you know, somebody should ask him who's actually getting it ripped away. Who specifically? And once they give, if they ever give you those answers, which is why he won't come on a show like this, because that's exactly what will be asked. Who specifically is getting that Medicaid ripped away and the SNAP ripped away from? And I understand that there are changes. You know, illegal immigrants will no longer be qualified in states that do a shell game to use federal Medicaid funding to fund illegal immigrants' health care. I understand that people who are able-bodied, who were qualified under the old COVID expansion, will no longer be qualified. Well, you weren't qualified before the COVID expansion either. And, you know, if you are qualified, proving it twice a year instead of one time a year. And listen, if our tax dollars, if hardworking people's tax dollars is going to help you, if you need Medicaid, if you need SNAP, if you need these services, if the tax dollars of the abled, if the tax dollars of hardworking people are going to help you, well, then proving it twice a year instead of once a year probably shouldn't be that too much of a burden. And it is, you know, feel free to go out on your own and do your own thing. But it's interesting, you know, they're using this obviously for political posturing. And I was able to post some stuff on my Facebook page while I was gone to kind of clarify exactly where those cuts in Medicaid were being used. And I think most Americans, even Democrats, would agree that, yeah, they really don't want their tax dollars going to those things anyway. But you'll have some that say, no, it's too much of a burden to prove it twice a year rather than just once a year. Well, why? I mean, if you were able to prove it in January, why can't you prove it in July? You should have all the paperwork ready and available, right? If you're able-bodied and you need to show up to do volunteer work or work a couple hours a month, then so be it. You're still getting your Medicaid. You're still getting your SNAP benefits. You're still getting what you need as far as the service, right? And if your state happens to do a shell game where they kind of do a switcheroo to use federal dollars and then pay for illegal immigrant health care, well, you know what? That's not what our tax dollars are there to fund. And if, well, they're here, well, you should blame the last administration for that. But I think we're in for a lot of political charlatans the next coming month. We've seen it from the start before they even knew there was anything. And they're continuing now. But ask them specifically who is getting cut. Specifically. Where are these cuts? Who are they affecting specifically? And ask anyone you know. Have you been cut? Are you being affected by any of this? Let us know. Tell us how. Love to hear the story. It's 3:33 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. I'm watching in the studio here, Fox News. We have Senator Dave McCormick, who's talking about the deal with U.S. Steel, which is going to remain based in the Pittsburgh area, and Nippon Steel, a Japanese company, who have come to an agreement which U.S. Steel will remain control of the company, but Nippon Steel is going to become a partner in that entity, which is a big deal. They're talking about 70,000 jobs, U.S. jobs here in America. And again, U.S. Steel will remain based in the Pittsburgh area, so here in Pennsylvania. So some good news coming out of those negotiations and that agreement. So one of the other things while I was gone last week is the county courts ruled to remove the county, the solicitor, and commissioner chairman Bill Gaughan from a lawsuit basically stating that the commissioner cannot make decisions unilaterally. The Lackawanna County Board of Commissioners can only act as a board. So remove them, but then Bill Gaughan appeals that decision again on his own. So, I mean, here's a if the court said that you cannot institute a lawsuit on your own as a single commissioner, and how do you appeal that on your own? And shouldn't he held responsible personally for any cost that are incurred? And I understand they're saying, well, there's not cost. This is not listen, it's everything cost money, especially when it comes to lawyers. So if there happens to be a law firm, a private law firm that's under a retainer or under a contracted agreement, there's usually a certain amount of hours that goes with that. And it may be covered by that agreement. But if they use up their hours on this frivolous, how do you even call it? I mean, he's basically grasping to the mountain as much as he can. He's holding on to the pole as they're pulling his feet. No, I'm not leaving. I'm not going anywhere. It's mine, all mine. This is what he's doing. This is literally what he's doing. But using our money to do it. And it must be easy to do it that way. So I would love for the courts to step in and say, no, if you're going to do this, you have to put up a personal bond if you're going to continue this. Because how can the court say that you can't operate, you can't act and institute a lawsuit unilaterally on your own beck and whim? And they basically said that the argument from the solicitor, which is something we should look into down the road if the solicitor is giving that poor legal advice, but then he can appeal it on his own. I mean, shouldn't the decision to an appeal have to go to a board vote between Commissioner Chermak and Commissioner Gaughan? And if one says yes and one says no, well, then they can't appeal. But again, we're in this Lackawanna County politics wind tunnel where it's just a different operating system, I guess. I guess we're still working on Windows ME or Windows 2000 or whatever the hell there was back in the day. because it's interesting. And listen, we're starting to get into time now to where we need a voting block of commissioners. And if this continues to be delayed, if this continues to move on, if this continues down this road, listen, quite honestly, if I was the commissioner at this point, I wouldn't make a vote. I'm not voting on anything till we have three commissioners. And if it shuts down county government in Lackawanna County, then so be it. This is what Bill Gaughan has done by these lawsuits. This is the monkey wrench that he's thrown in the system. He's not in favor of his own party. He's not in favor of the county right now. He's not in favor. I just saw he's having a fundraiser. And fundraiser for what? I mean, you really think you're going to run for something again? After giving people a 33% tax increase and slapping them with the reappraisals? It's going to be an interesting time. And your own party wanting nothing to do with you? It's funny how it's all funded through Act Blue, too. Yeah, that Act Blue. It's interesting. I had the flyer sent to me, and I posted it out there. So it'll be interesting to see this go forward. But it's just made me shake my head for the little time I spent on looking into the local issues and news while I was away for the week. But it's, again, costing us, the taxpayer, another pretty penny, brought to you by Commissioner Bill Gaughan. It is 3:43 here at WILK. And let me tell you about the Good Feet store located right here in Scranton on the corner of Route 6 and Commerce Boulevard across from the Olive Garden. They're making it easier than ever to feel your best. All week I was on my feet. I was in different areas, walking across grass platforms, walking through downtown Annapolis and cobblestones, standing at events, pomp and circumstances, watching the formal parade, the 8th and I silent drill team, which was phenomenal, but all on my feet. And if it wasn't for my Good Feet Art Supports, I'd be in a very bad place right now because they have kept me on my feet, literally. The best part, they're proudly made in the USA. You can go in for a free test walk. You go in, you meet with them, they'll take an imprint of your feet, they'll walk you through it, they'll put them in your shoes, you test them out. And if it's good to go, then you get them. You want to feel better, visit them at 1945 Commerce Boulevard in Scranton. Call them at 570-534-0980 or check them out online at goodfeet.com because you're not going anywhere without Good Feet. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio. 72 degrees, 3:47 here on this Tuesday, May 27th, 2025. So listen, you can't give Lackawanna County all the nonsense. Luzerne County Council may sue County Redevelopment Authority over a rail line. Yeah, they're basically suing themselves. Luzerne County Council is set to vote today on whether to sue the County Redevelopment Authority, according to several sources. The county wants the authority to turn over its railroads so it can be sold to recoup $3.28 million. The authority still owes the county for the original acquisition of the line. While the delinquent loan was stated as a reason, it may be part of a broader push to put the track into private ownership with the hope that it could retain commercial use, but also add passenger rail service. Interesting. Has this conversation come up in Luzerne County at all? Passenger rail service? Passenger rail service to where? Is it going to be part of the New York City Scranton line? Is it going to go down to Philly? What's the plan? How come this hasn't been out in the open more? And maybe it has been. Maybe I just haven't heard it. But if you've heard something on it, it's interesting. But basically, they're suing themselves because the Lackawanna County, the Luzerne County Redevelopment Authority is appointed by the Lackawanna County Council. So it's interesting. If approved, the resolution said council supports the inquiry into an outstanding debt owed to the county and subsequent initiation of litigation against any and all parties responsible for the debt repayment. So here's two entities, the same county, basically created one by the other. There's going to be a lawsuit instituted where who makes money? You guessed it, the lawyers. The lawyers make money. I would imagine the Redevelopment Authority, if they do not have a lawyer, would have to hire one. Even if they're a solicitor, usually they hire outside firms to do such a thing. Same thing with the county. Usually they hire an outside lawyer, and the solicitor does not handle these things. So is it going to cost the county more money because they can't sit down and discuss like a governing body should with each other. One literally created the other, and they have to sue each other to come to a conclusion on something. But, you know, you can't have Lackawanna County and their nonsense have all the fun. Here's Luzerne County looking to sue themselves, for the most part, over a railroad. It's time for the Bloomberg Money Minute. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's 3:53 here on this Tuesday, May 27th, 72 degrees. We'll have some traffic fee up in a minute, in a little bit. But Hamas is trying to pull a fast one on the Trump's Middle East envoy after the latest ceasefire proposal. It's disappointing and completely unacceptable. They tried to pull off a bait and switch on the latest ceasefire deal by altering the terms of the proposals that were sent to the terror group, according to President Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff. Now, this is nothing new for Hamas. They've been doing this all along with both Israel and us. And again, it's Hamas, so we know what we're dealing with. It's really not a surprise, but the mere fact that they are getting the snot kicked out of them on a pretty much daily basis, you think they'd come to some sort of realization, but I guess not. Hamas claimed on Monday that it had been presented with a new U.S. proposal that would see a 70-day ceasefire and the release of five live hostages on the first and final days of the truce. Hamas tied spokesperson told news organizations. The deal Hamas claimed to have received would also include a partial withdrawal of Israeli from the Gaza Strip. This supposed deal would also include the release of hundreds of Palestinian prisoners held by Israel, many serving lengthy sentences, which was never part of the deal. So they're adding this. But a disappointed Witkoff blasted Hamas, claiming that the terms of the deal he had actually sent to Hamas were very different from their response. So basically, we send a deal to Hamas and saying, listen, you want 70-day ceasefire, this is what the deal is. They'll go, great, yes, we accept those terms, here's the deal, and send us a totally new deal. And this is how this has gotten. The latest Witkoff proposal includes the release of 10 living hostages, 19 deceased bodies of the hostages, in return for 45 to 60 days of ceasefire and the release of the Palestinian prisoners. So they're not too far off. But what's the alternative for Hamas? You keep getting killed? What I've seen from Hamas is disappointing and completely unacceptable, Witkoff said in a statement. He said Israel agreed to the terms of the deal he proposed and that it would offer a path to a permanent ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. I agreed to lead these negotiations. There's a deal on the table and Hamas needs to accept it, Witkoff told reporters. The ceasefire will lead to meaningful negotiations and find a path to a permanent ceasefire. The alternative is we back off and Israeli will go in on a ground operation and finish what's left of Hamas off. I mean, that's really the terms of this deal here. The fact that they're bringing this on, it's hilarious because with other Iranian-backed groups in the area, the Houthis in Yemen, be it one of them. It's interesting because over the past year, the Houthis in Yemen have said they've sank one of our aircraft carriers a dozen times. They're claiming an utter victory, even though they've been devastated beyond belief as far as, you know, what happened, to where it has been termed by the admiral in charge of the area as the largest bombing campaign from the U.S. carrier in the history of the world. And there's the numbers that dictated. I don't have them in front of me, but it was truly something else as far as what's happened there. And again, with terrorists that embed themselves with the civilian population, unless you deal with collateral damage as an accepted casualty of war, you're not going to get all of them. And we've seen that with Hamas. We've seen that with the Houthi rebels. We've seen it with ISIS. But there's really not much here left for Hamas to negotiate with. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office dismissed the Hamas deal as a U.S. proposal on Monday, No responsible Israeli government could accept it, the statement from Netanyahu's office read. The last ceasefire agreed between Israel and Hamas, which began in January, effectively ended on March 18th, and Netanyahu's forces renewed its military campaign in Gaza. So as far as Israel is concerned, there is no ceasefire. Military operations are continuing and will continue. And if there seems to be an acceptable agreement that the U.S. makes that Hamas will agree to, the Israelis will look at it. Hamas responded with rocket attacks and strikes on Israel 2 days later. So it appears that the job's still not finished. The terror group has asserted it will only free all the remaining Israeli hostages seized on October 7th, 2023 attack on Israel, and agreed to a permanent ceasefire if the Jewish state pulls out of Gaza completely. Netanyahu's office has insisted that the war will only end once Hamas is eradicated. Well, it sounds like they're pretty far off on what they're going to agree to now, don't you think? And it has been a very divisive topic here in the United States, in some parts. But if your home was being fired at with rockets indiscriminately for years, wouldn't you want your government to go in and put a stop to it? Don't you think enough would be enough? And then you have October 7th, tragedy. Sooner or later, the U.S. is going to back off and say, hey, it's your area, handle it. And it's not going to work out well for Hamas or Gaza. Now, you do have some pushback. It's 4 o'clock here at WILK.